Happy Chamber Music Month, listeners. Yes, that's actually a thing. May is Chamber Music Month. Editor Mark DiClaudio here, and this week you'll be hearing a show from the Classical Classroom Wayback Machine, back when Dacia's voice was higher and squeakier, and believe it or not, she was even shorter. This show features the Enzo String Quartet. You know, string quartets are one of those things that we've all just come to accept as a normal arrangement of instruments in the classical music world. But Enzo's going to take us further, and they're going to teach us why and how string quartets come to be. Hey, by the way, we're reposting this episode on May 9th, 2016. And if you're in the Houston or Galveston area this week, there's a cool performance Houston Grand Opera is doing. It's called After the Storm, and it's by David Handlin, who's going to be on Classical Classroom very soon. It actually incorporates audio clips from Houston Public Media's news anchors. If you're in the area, check it out. It's on the 13th and 15th. Oh, yeah, one last thing. Because of our amazing listeners, we just reached 100 ratings on iTunes. You guys rock. If you listen and haven't yet rated and reviewed us on iTunes, get on it. It's how we dominate the dojo. That's it. Enjoy the show.
My name is Dacia Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark secret. I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical... But I really want to learn. So... Every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the Classical Classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Dacia Clay, and today with me here in the studio is the Enzo Quartet. They are Grammy-nominated. They have been together since 1999. They're based out of New York. We're lucky enough to have him here in Houston because they've been working on some recordings today, which we're actually going to get to in a bit. Do you guys want to go around and introduce yourselves, starting with you, Richard?
Sure. I'm Richard Belcher, the cellist. I'm from New Zealand, and I'm a founding member of the quartet.
I'm Melissa Reardon. I'm the violist in the string quartet, and I live in New York City now, but I'm originally from Massachusetts.
I'm John Marcus, I'm second violinist of the quartet, and I'm originally from New York City, live in New York City, and I joined the quartet actually when they were residents here at Rice in Houston, so Houston is certainly a nice place to come back to every time we get a chance.
Oh, sorry. I'm Maureen Nelson, first violin, and also a founding member of the quartet, and living in New York with the quartet, but I'm originally from... Philadelphia, or I'm from Pennsylvania.
So yeah, you mentioned that you guys were at Rice, and I didn't know that there was such a thing as a quartet in residence. I was looking at that. I had no idea that Rice had a quartet in residence. And when did that first happen?
For us, that first happened in 2002.
And you're coming back this year.
We're coming back in a month for...
It's a visiting residency.
It's just a visiting residency where we're going to do a lot of work with the composition department.
What does that entail?
That entails a concert. We're going to give a concert of all relatively new music.
Mm-hmm.
And so written new for us means this... concert. The oldest piece was written in the 70s, and the newest is being written right now. So, and then the following day, we're going to be doing what's called a composer reading.
Mm-hmm.
So we have just received some scores from students, I think 7 or 8 students from the Rice Composition School, and we are going to be working on them and recording them for the students.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's
really,
really
neat. Cool thing.
Why, to someone like me, the idea of a string quartet, it makes sense because I've heard of lots of string quartets, but I don't actually know why these 3 instruments go together so well.
There must be something magic about it. At some point, it locked in as a formation. I think perhaps it might have been Joseph Haydn who really kind of solidified this formation of two violins, one viola, one cello, mm-hmm. as the string quartet. And I think that we even, when we do children's concerts, refer to him as Papa Haydn because he is the father of the string quartet. He discovered that this blended really well mm-hmm. somehow, and it was a good vehicle for composition. And then, you know, after him, Mozart followed writing string quartets dedicated to Haydn also. And then I think it just became an established form.
Mm-hmm. I think part of that is just the natural range that these particular instruments have, which is very similar to the four-part choral writing.
Mm, yeah.
So you've got, I mean, that's the big thing about string instruments is we're trying to imitate the sound of the voice. That's yeah. originally what that big goal is. And so with the violin being so high and like the soprano and all the way down through the middle.
Tenor. Bass.
Alto tenor yeah. through to the cello.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really thought about that yeah. because I was listening to a piece that Gil Shaham was playing and like it was just so, in fact, when it first came on, I thought somebody was singing.
Yeah.
And I know a little bit about the fact that, you know, the first instruments that were created to kind of mimic the voice. And so it kind of makes sense that the instruments in a quartet would try to mimic that.
Mm.
And that's how they fit together. Huh. That's very interesting.
And then, of course, because they're all strings, you know, there's a natural
sonority
that's, you know, similar.
Sonority, like the sonic, how it fits together.
You know,
like the timbre.
The timbre is, quite different than, say, a piano.
Yeah.
The way we can use the bow to draw the sound out, mm-hmm. we can really work on that together to do it the same way.
We can articulate it the same
to way. Make it sound just very similar, yeah.
There are so many elements. I think one of the things that stands out, of course, is that relationship that you have with the audience where you can sometimes really feel a connection with them. There's a certain energy in the air. You can tell that they're sort of hanging on every phrase. And that's a great thing that can happen in a performance. There's also the excitement of the performance, the energy that you have when you're, you know, getting ready for performance and on stage. And of course, there's the spontaneity of the things that happen in the concert. We rehearse for hours and hours and hours in preparation for performances. And of course, since we're not machines, we do things differently in a performance. And so that spontaneity is exciting and it's also sort of thrilling. We don't know what's going to happen and we have to be on our toes to respond to all the new things that could be happening in a performance.
Scary exciting,
yeah, a little bit.
John, can you tell me about like some crazy stuff that's happened in performances that you've done or like crazy places you've played?
I remember one time we were playing something. I think
this
we were
is
going to
be good.
It's not that interesting. I mean, but one thing I do remember is that we were playing Janáček and I had to play something and I turned the page, my music fell on the floor and Maureen had a second to pick it up. I remember you managed to pick it up
I
and
did.
Put it in the right place.
I'm so quick. Oh, you hit your face.
Oh,
face.
In the same piece. there's a thing where it's like a really fast
it's
tremolo for a long time.
It's like sul panticello, which is
so it's like very close and
close to
it
the
has
bridge.
To sound sort of maddening, but it also has to be controlled, obviously. Otherwise, you wind up with a real bang on the nose because I was doing it and then like it sort of flew off and just totally hit me.
Gotta work on that control, John.
Gotta work on the control.
So what did you do?
I just kept on going.
And we try not to laugh.
The show must go on and I try not to laugh, but I think the others had a good chuckle.
Did you guys like have to stifle?
Well, it's just a little weird,
I think
isn't
we're
it?
Not winning. Like,
yeah. Or sometimes I think when we do something that we like, oh, I'm gonna go for it, and then it's sort of like a little bit too special. And it's sort of like a lot of eyes like, all right.
Won't be doing that next time.
I have the same thing, but I'm not going to copy that.
That's awesome.
I'm still waiting for John to pull out the glasses. Attachment.
Oh yeah, your glasses almost.
His head.
Yeah.
Sometimes they look so close to falling off.
There was one time that a bee actually attacked Maureen.
That's what? Right.
Oh, where were you performing? Of a piece. That
it was
a place called Maverick. That's right. And they had had a beehive living in something that was on stage.
That's a really cool like tree trunk that's turned into a sculpture.
Yeah,
It's a somewhat outdoor.
It's indoor, but it's a barn and its back is open. Yeah. So.
So it's still,
Yes. Well, and last time we were there, there were three bears outside.
It was like the hottest day of the summer. I think it was ridiculously hot and muggy. And, well, I think that day, I think I probably had hairspray in my hair to keep it, you know, back. And we started the piece, and there was a bee that just kept coming around head, and I was like trying to look all artistic and trying to like make it go away.
So you're like dancing and swaying, but actually trying to get
ready
away from
just
the
go
bee.
Like
well, it ended up on your finger at some point.
Oh, it was having a good old time. Yeah.
Oh my
but I kept
God.
Playing, and it was a really quiet hide-in, right? It was Opus 20, number 4. Like, boom, 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 boom. And there's, like, this forte outburst, and I was like, ba-da-da-da-da-dum! And, like, shook my hand. I think eventually it went away.
So you were using, like, the strong parts of the music to try to
escape
from the beat. That's great. What's your favorite sort of venue to play in as a quartet? What's most suited?
Actually, we like
tend to be really fun.
Yeah,
like sometimes we do house concerts, and that's you're talking about that.
Yeah, it's well, as Melissa said earlier, the connection with the audience is a big part of the excitement.
Yeah,
and so when you can be close, I mean, there are bigger halls that you can also still feel close to the audience. So I would say any hall that you get that connection, where you feel the audience just enough to, you know, give it an edge.
Mm-hmm.
But
generally halls that have, you know, some a certain amount of reverberation in them are satisfying to play in. It gives your sound this kind of glow or some resonance to your sound, and that's always more satisfying than playing in a really dry space. And so I think ideal hall setting would be like a smaller hall that you can connect with the audience, and then it has this kind of warm, resonant sound. That's satisfying.
I heard, too, jumping around, that you guys were going to be making a music video.
Yes.
This is. Are there going to be like busty ladies in bikinis?
Yes, me, just and Melissa,
hot cars and stuff.
I don't know about that yet.
No.
We can always work on it.
So what's it? You said this was going to be like your fourth video. Mm-hmm. What's it like to do a video shoot? Because
what we're trying to do is create a video performance that gets inside the quartet so that it brings to the viewer something that they can't see from a live performance. So we'll be making a video shot with lots of different angles just so that people can see how we interact with the quartet. And we've got a couple up on YouTube already that you can see.
Cool.
And yeah, it's fun. It's just a different... Hopefully a different experience for the audience to see how we interact.
Yeah, you sort of get the view as you would be if you were in the quartet. So there might be a shot from the angle of somebody sitting over here looking at Richard or Maureen, and then it sort of feels like you're inside the quartet. And I think that's a perspective
that's cool.
That could be interesting for the viewer.
There was some GoPro video that I saw online where they actually had like a GoPro attached to the end of a violin, and so as they were performing, you were like looking right down.
Oh wow.
So neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. I know that you guys have been recording today a piece by Kurt Stallman, who has also been on the Classical Classroom, that was inspired by a piece by Schubert, It was the quartet in C minor, the quartet number 12 in C minor. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I know the words. I don't know what order they go in.
The Schubert, yes. It's actually referred to as Quartettsatz because it's a quartet movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's referred to that because it's actually unfinished. It's he only wrote a little beginning of the second movement, and that's it. So he left it unfinished. So there's...
Well, normally, I guess normally there would be four different movements.
The set, yeah.
There'd be a slow movement and then a light-hearted one and then a flashy finish, one to finish up with. So,
but this is a standalone work, Quartettsatz, and he never completed the...
I think it's incredible movement, and that's why it's played so often and we know it so well. It's had a huge life in the quartet repertoire over the years.
Is it something that's common or?
Yes, it's one of the sort of standard pieces in the classical repertoire for the string quartet.
So this is something that if I were a violinist, I would be playing it.
If you were in a string quartet, you would probably be familiar with this movement for sure.
So we've kind of gotten to discussions with Kurt, like, about perhaps writing something to pair with the Schubert since it's an unfinished work. And what Kurt ended up coming up with was really interesting. He took, I mean, from my perspective, it's like he took the Quartettsatz and kind of put it through a kaleidoscope, a 20th century, 21st century, I guess now we're talking about, and like gave it like a kind of modern edge to it.
Just to clarify, I read that you guys actually commissioned Kurt to write this piece. So you did. Did you say to him, take this Schubert piece and do something with it?
Yeah, well, we should thank Chamber Music America. They provided the grant money for this, which was fantastic. And so, yeah, the whole idea was we knew that we wanted to start with Quartettsatz, and we wanted Kurt to write a piece that somehow was a response or a reflection on the Schubert work. And then, you know, as Maureen was saying, he made some changes, and just very small changes. Amazing, this tiniest change creates a whole different world of sound. So the opening figure, he added one note extra, so it goes up one half step extra, and then occasionally he'd add one note longer to a phrase. And it just totally transforms the piece. It's quite amazing. So the cool thing about that is we got like a brand new version of Quartettsatz, the same structure, and just like a different language of it though. And I should say one of the things that we've always wanted to do as a quartet and made an effort to do from when we got started is to have a good range, a well-balanced range of repertoire, including some of the classics that sort of draw us into being a string quartet in the first place, but also to keep working on new pieces so that we're really expanding the canon, as it were.
Yeah, I was reading that you guys are kind of into playing sort of lesser-known works, by the composers that we know and love, and then also
There are a lot of composers that we've found have written amazing pieces that don't feature prominently. One recent example is one by Richard Strauss, which I've never heard of anyone playing. I know people have played it before, but certainly I'm not aware of any big groups have recorded it or haven't heard any performances. Mm. But we saw that he'd written a quartet and we thought, well, he's a great composer, we should look into that. And then we ended up recording it. We loved it. It's a terrific piece. And I think that was a really cool thing for us to do, to work on a piece that none of us had heard. So we didn't have an idea in our head of how it should go. And that's very much like how we have to approach brand new pieces, where we have to, it's a lot more creative in a way. We have to come up with it ourselves. Whereas any piece that we've heard before, like the Beethoven quartets or Mozart or whatever it might be, we have a sense of how it should go. You know, like if I say to you Beethoven wrote a Fifth Symphony, you probably know how that starts and you've got an idea in your head of how it should go. But the cool thing is trying to bring that approach to these pieces that we know and love is to try to look at them with really fresh ears. And I think that helps keep everything really exciting all the time.
Sort of playing these lesser known pieces allows you to kind of bring your own flavor as a musician to it, without hearing that sort of, you know, performance that you've heard over and over again.
And then we can apply that same practice to the pieces that we've all heard a lot.
I'm interested in how you guys got together. You met at Yale and formed there. I know there are a lot of string quartets out there. What kind of made you guys say, we should do this thing because we have something special to bring? What was it that prompted you, John?
Well, I was actually going to, I think Richard and Maureen, but since they sort of started at Yale, but I know for me, and I know I'm sure for all of us, playing chamber music is really, especially for any instrument possible, it's but strings in particular, the music, the repertoire that we get to play, especially in quartets, is really some of the most special music that composers have written. It has gone through, all of our favorite composers have basically written all throughout their life string quartet music, and it really is it shows their development, it shows a lot of their interest in experimenting, and also some of their greatest works, you know, and that goes from Haydn all the way, you know, to Bartok, to Britten, Shostakovich, and people today writing Elliot Carter. I think there's something very special about string quartet writing, and I'm sure that all four of us feel very special to be able to play in a string quartet for that reason and many others. So that was one of the reasons I love playing chamber music, and I love being in a quartet, but I'm sure the others have also other personal answers for that as well.
Yeah, Rishi, you look like you have something to add to that.
Sure. Well, exactly what John said, but I think for me personally, that was part of the attraction of going to Yale. That's when I first came over to the States to do my master's in cello, and the Tokyo String Quartet was coaching chamber music there. And back home, I had played quite a lot of piano trios, and there weren't many violists at the school I was at, and so I really wanted to play quartets, not knowing that would be what I'm doing now, but it was certainly something that I wanted to do and just be a part of. So when I arrived, we had placement auditions for orchestra and chamber music, and the coordinator asked if I was interested in playing quartet, and I jumped at that. And the first violin was Maureen, and we were really lucky. I feel really lucky that we connected really well musically, and even though I don't know if I said much to Maureen in the first year, outside of rehearsals. But it was just it was something that was really exciting for us, and at the end of the first year, we opted to carry on playing in the same quartet the following year, and then we started getting some concerts outside of the university setting, and that was really exciting, just getting that taste of what it could be like. And then we were encouraged to stay together beyond graduation, which we did, and that's where the graduate residency type thing came in, very helpful for us. Firstly, in Illinois, we went to a two-year course to study with the Vermeer Quartet, and that was kind of an amazing experience. I feel like my ears really opened up. And then we came down here to Rice University, where they have a phenomenal string quartet program, where you can actually get a master's degree in string quartet playing.
Really?
I didn't
know that.
Yeah, it's an incredible, incredible opportunity, mm-hmm. it was for us. So you really get to focus on working as a group, which is quite different. It's a different skill set, really, than playing your instrument by itself. So it's a lot of fun.
Where are you guys going from here? I know you've just recorded Kurt's piece, and like, what's next?
Next,
you've got me. Well, I know you're gonna be in Rice doing this
in March.
Yeah,
Before that,
we're gonna be in Iowa for a couple of concerts.
New York.
We've got a really cool program that we're doing with mm-hmm. the Boston Brass Quintet, all based on Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. So we'll be doing that in a couple mm-hmm. of places in Iowa, and playing in New York, a program with some Italian music and a couple of New Zealand pieces as well, which is cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And your general plan for world domination?
Yeah, we're hoping to take over by the end of the year.
It's happening. We're just
I feel it. I feel the magic.
We're working this
right now. You guys, thank you so much for taking time to be on the Classical Classroom. I know you've been recording all day, and probably there was traveling before that, so really appreciate it. Now I've enjoyed getting kind of a look into what it's like to be in a quartet, and I can't wait to hear more of your music. I listened to some today. It was very cool.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, everyone, that's it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Tumblr. Subscribe to us, rate, and review us on the iTunes. Thanks today to audio producer Todd He-Man Hulslander for twiddling knobs. Thanks to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing grayskull eyes. Thanks to the Enzo String Quartet for being here today. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. By the power of Grayskull. We'll catch you next time.